Next is a discussion of our fiscal year annual financial report. John Hollis.
Thank you again, members of the committee and the board. This is our annual report that we bring to you each January. We had a good year. We had a good audit. Ben Conley with Grant Thornton will be here in just a minute to do sort of the second half of this report and can report on the results of the audit from their perspective and their observations. But I'll go through the purpose of the audit and our financials, of course, are to present fairly our financial operations. You can see in accordance with GAAP, we follow GASB, the Government Accounting Standards Boards, of course, being a governmental entity. We implemented back about 3 years ago GASB 34, which was a very far-reaching pronouncement that GASB had put out at that time and changed some of our reporting and updated some of the formatting, and that's been implemented and continues to be used. And of course, we have a single auditor compliance audit that we do, and Ben will speak to that also. The report highlights that you'll receive, just for a reminder, the CAFR is a historical document. It's based on a GAAP basis, as I mentioned, whereas the budget, which we talk about to some degree also, is really more of a prospective document. It looks ahead, and it's really, for the most part, based on cash basis. So they're two different types of things, and that's why sometimes it gets a little bit confusing in trying to compare them, and that's what I'm going to try to do here in just a minute, is to compare the results of the budget for the year, which we reported on last October when I reported the fourth quarter budget reports to the year-end CAFR information. You can see in the information that you received in the draft of the CAFR, there's basically three sections. There's an introductory section, which has, as you can see, various things, organizational chart, information, pictures about the board and the management staff, and then a letter, transmittal letter, things like that. Then the major part of the report, of course, is the financial section of the report, and then the final section is statistical information, which for the most part is unaudited information at the end of the report. This is a schedule where, as I mentioned, I try to reconcile a little bit of what the budgeted results were from last year to what the CAFR or GAAP-based results were. In last fiscal year, you all approved a budget that had about an $800,000 surplus projected. In October, we reported to you that the surplus turned out to be significantly higher than that. It was a little over $4 million was the surplus, primarily from both increased revenues and decreased expenses. So we had them from both sides. And primarily in things like interest income was higher, some of our lake operations revenues were higher, and we've received pollution control bond monies, fees this last year that we never budget for because we're not real, of course, don't really predict that necessarily. So that drove some of the revenues up, and then expenditures were lower in some areas because we just had some lower spending and really across the organization, but primarily in the lake areas, Possum Kingdom Lake, Lake Granberry, Lake Limestone, and some savings in those areas. So that was the why the budgeted actuals came in quite a bit better than were budgeted for, or the actuals. If you look over at the CAFR, you can see the dramatic difference in where you're showing on a sort of a cash basis and budget share basis, a $4 million surplus all of a sudden becomes a $5.8 million deficit, which is obviously pretty significant. But as I try to explain why that is, that really begins to highlight the differences in budgetary sort of accounting and GAAP-based accounting. And you can see really primarily four items, as I've highlighted down there in the middle column. The first one being depreciation versus debt service. From a budgetary standpoint, we actually represent, again, more on a cash basis, our debt service, which is our principal and interest payments. But from a GAAP basis or an accounting basis, you don't recognize principal repayments as an expense. You recognize them as an offset on the balance sheet to your debt. And so you don't recognize them expense, but in replacement for that, you recognize depreciation. And of course, depreciation is a non-cash item, but it's obviously how you write down your assets over time. But so we basically replace the debt service from an accounting standpoint. You pull the principal payments of the debt service off and you replace them with the depreciation. And the results of that this particular year was That was actually a net expense, if you will. It's a non-cash related expense, but it's a net expense of about $4.6 million. So that reduces your expenses from an accounting standpoint by almost $4.7 million. And the other big part of it was gain or loss on sale of assets. We transferred the Sugar Land wastewater facility back to the city of Sugar Land this last year. You may have remembered the year before we did a similar thing with Lake Allen Henry, where that was transferred back to the city of Lubbock. And last year we had a large loss on sale of assets from the Lake Allen Henry transfer. This year we have a large loss on sale of assets based on the Sugar Land. That's not something to be concerned about or is, again, a cash basis, but it's simply when you take the asset off your books and you take the debt off your books, the way we sort of account for that, the asset has greater value than the debt, and so when you remove it off your books, you create a loss basically on a accounting basis. And again, there's nothing from a financial standpoint that is negative or bad about that. It's just the accounting treatment of it, that your asset had a greater value because we depreciate the asset over a longer period of time, and we actually amortize the debt over a shorter period of time, so it just creates a loss when you transfer it.
John, go ahead. I was going to ask you from a standpoint, you mentioned the word value, but when you're removing the assets, you're removing them at the basis on the balance sheet, right? It's not a value per se, right?
Exactly. We're moving just the cost, the net book value of the asset off of the both the original cost and, of course, the accumulated depreciation are both being removed, as well as, of course, the debt side, whatever the remaining debt is being removed.
Okay.
And that's what's creating the loss.
John, is that debt that you keep referring to, like on that asset, is that a bonded indebtedness?
Yes, sir. That is the bonded indebtedness we have for that particular asset. And actually, the obligation to repay it is with the customer. In the case of Sugar Land, they had a few million dollars of debt that they still owed on the asset. And you may remember that part of the arrangement they made is they had to pay that debt off to be able to, acquire that asset. For us to transfer that asset to them, the first step they had to do was to pay that debt off. But we had it on our books as bonded indebtedness. And then, of course, the asset was also on our books.
You don't actually have a firm figure that you sold that asset for?
Well, it was not sold for any. There were no proceeds from this. It was simply transferred to part of the agreement in the contract was, if the city of Sugar Land ever chose to pay off the debt, or whenever the debt was paid off, they could then receive the asset back.
Then why, if they're going to assume the bonded indebtedness, why do you show the loss?
Well, the debt indebtedness just transferred off of our books because they paid it off of our books, so they removed the indebtedness from the Brazos River Authority's books.
I understand that.
And of course, they took on whatever indebtedness onto the city of Sugar Land's books on their side. I mean, I'm not sure how they financed it, but
I think let me pose a question a little bit away, and maybe Fred, this is what you're looking for. Why is the asset on there anyway? If the debt's not ours, why is the asset ours?
Well, historically, that's a good question from a standpoint of from a contractual standpoint, you could make the case. But during the time that we constructed the asset and borrowed the money to build the asset, it would be considered to be our asset at that particular point. It's just at some point if, in this case, the city of Sugar Land exercised their rights contractually, then they have the right to receive the assets. So certainly they always had the right to get the asset back. But until that point, it's the Brazos River Authority's asset. It would have been the same thing on Lake Allen Henry. It was actually the same thing back 2 years ago on WMRs. Of course, the wastewater treatment operation in the city of Waco. And you remember that was transferred back to the city of Waco under the terms of that agreement also. But those historically would be carried as our asset until that time.
We talk so much, and the board is so aware of reserves and this kinds of stuff. And we talk about reserves, we're talking about operating reserves. These kinds of transactions do not affect the reserves.
No, that's correct.
I think that's one thing. I mean, that this has no. I mean, we didn't. our reserve did not go back down by 5.7 million.
Exactly. Yes, sir. Yes, they had no, that's a very good point. There's no cash implication. Now, there were some restricted assets that are part of our restricted reserves that that were reduced, but those were already restricted and considered to be others, people's, you know, other entities' assets.
They're down here on the balance sheet.
Yes, yes.
Do they, is there any effect on our bond rating?
No, sir. No, sir, not at all.
That's not a...
It's not a concern.
The raters don't, they don't flag that.
That's right. It's not a concern at all. Just for future purposes, obviously, other facilities that we have that are in a similar situation, the Temple Belton Wastewater Treatment Facility is of a similar arrangement. I mean, we still have that. I'm just saying that there would be a similar arrangement that we have where we carry that asset and we carry that debt associated with that one, too. So, and actually, SWATS is a similar arrangement, too. The SWATS facility up at Lake Granbury is we carry that asset. We also carry the debt on that. So,
let me see if Jimmy can explain this. These are 1960, 1970 contracts, and that was the way they set it up at the time, and they included in the water supply system. Now then, we've gone beyond my comprehension level, and Jimmy's going to tell you.
Jim. Just, and I steal a little bit of your.
Get up here, please. Yeah. You're stealing.
Yeah, I liken this to a municipality that has usually a general fund, which is funded by property taxes, and a water and sewer fund that's funded by water and sewer revenue. And you build a wastewater treatment plant and you put it in the general fund where it really shouldn't have been in the first place. I think this is a remnant of an older accounting approach that in what we're doing right now in our business models would not be consistent, and you probably won't see us doing this in the future.
Yeah, I think Jim, I think Ben might may want to say this, but for some of us like Fred and everything, I mean, in my office, I'm not even allowed anything that says government on it. It's an audit because I'm always, you know, I'm over here in the other, what I call the real world, Fred's world, most of our world, and when we see losses, we see losses.
That's right.
But from a governmental standpoint, where so much of these things, and I look at them for a very simplistic viewpoint, as just being fiduciaries. I mean, we're here's the cost, and here's your debt, and you're paying for it, and it's going through, and there it is. And when it goes away, it was yours anyway, and now it's yours. Off our books, in terms of our operation and maintenance and everything, it doesn't affect, it's just an accounting thing.
Right, and where 100% of the responsibility of the debt and the operations is contractually the customer's responsibility, then it should be, you know, transparent in our...
Maybe Gatsby and their wisdom someday will be able to get us off this, Ben.
I think that's oxymoron, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
One point I also make is that these assets, whether it's Lake Allen, whether it's WMR's Lake Allen Henry, Sugar Land, Temple Belt, and SWATS, are not part of the water supply system of the Brazos River Authority. They're not part of the, from a bonding standpoint or anything, they're separate entities that they're contract revenue debt and are considered by the bond markets and stuff to certainly be that and not part of really how they perceive to be the assets of the authority, technically from that standpoint. The other items that are reconciling items, you can see down here, are capital contributions. From a budgetary standpoint, we do receive reimbursement for capital expenditures from various entities, whether it's grant related or customer related. In our budget, we actually show those as a on the capital project side of the budget as a reduction of the cost of it, because that's the appropriate way to show it from a budgetary standpoint. But from an accounting standpoint, you actually have to book those as revenue from a GAAP standpoint and run them through the income statement. So that's why that $1,100,000 is there as a reconciling item. And then the last one, expenditures and others, we do have some expenditures. This is sort of the other side of that equation. We have some expenditures that we carry as capital expenditures from a budgetary. We carry it as part of the capital projects budget from a budgetary standpoint, but they're actual required to be operating expenses from a GAAP standpoint. And we recognize that. We know that they are, but from just a way to present the budget, we think it's more appropriate to show them as capital during the budgeting process. And then we know we always expense those items through the income statement, but they're accounted for in the budget process already from a cash standpoint. So again, there's no cash implications of any of these activities. It's strictly an accounting, as we've been indicating. So that's sort of the reconciliation. I know that's confusing, but as I said, GASB hasn't always made quite as much sense sometimes as you'd like, but that's what we're required to follow. Any questions? The next slide is simply showing some comparisons, and this information is right out of the CAFR, and just showing from year to year for the last 3 years some of the comparatives, operating revenues. You can see the operating revenues are actually going down slightly, but that's a little bit misleading, and that's total operating revenues. And the reason they're going down is because our cost reimbursable operations, again, specifically Sugar Land, the transfer of Sugar Land and the transfer of Lake Allen Henry in the last 2 years have caused our operating revenues to go down, but those are cost reimbursable operations. So from a standpoint that's not really affects the water supply system, the operating expenses are fairly steady during the same period, but what really went down, and I'll show it there in a minute, when you see four lines down where the interest expense, you can see how the interest expense has gone down over time, and you almost have to add that to the operating expenses to look at it, because that's the debt service associated with those cost reimbursable operations. What I would point out is if you look down right in the middle where it has surplus deficit subtotal, sort of the middle line in there is what you want to look at, and that really shows that over time, you can see how significantly less that is in 2006. But the in those prior years, it had the impact of the changes going on in the cost reimbursable operations is why there was a variation in that. Again, they cause a lot of the, especially when we were transferring those assets off of our books and stuff, it creates that type of information. And the other non-operating items right below that is really a combination of two things. It's the loss on sale that we've just been talking about. And again, you had in 2005, you have $5.4 million. That was really the loss on sale of Lake Allen Henry. And then the 2006 was the loss on sale that we were just speaking about of Sugar Land as we wrote those off. So that's what brings you to the net income and loss and how different that looks from year to year. But again, they're pretty much related to the loss on sale and those other types of reconciling items. Working capital, you can see, which is really our reserves, our uncommitted reserve balances, you can see are about where we expected them to be at the end of 2006. We're about $33 million. And just a minute ago, when we looked at the first quarter budget report, you saw that number was about up to about $40 million, which is what I was speaking of due to the timing, cash timing. It goes up in the first quarter and then we'll come back down some in the second quarter and the third. And you can see our total net assets has gone down, but again, that's reflected of the fact that we've removed the assets of Lake Allen Henry and Sugar Land over the course of time. So that really shows the impact, sort of the trends in those areas. Any questions? Yes.
John, this probably doesn't have anything to do with this. Do you see our operating revenues going up as we like expand Williamson County and get more people on systems, right?
Yes, absolutely. I do.
Going up.
Yes, and they are going up, and they'll continue to go up. And we'll show in a minute when Ben gets to his part of his presentation, he's got a few more financial charts that I didn't put on mine because they're already on his. And you'll see in a minute, and I'll make a note of that, and he will too. You can actually see where the operating revenues are going up. What's making it look like overall they're going down again is because of the Sugar Land and Lake Allen Henry's thing coming off the books in their operations. But otherwise, our water supply system revenues are all going up, raw water sales, lake operations, our treatment operations, and things like that. Yes. Any other questions? Okay, I'll ask Ben to come up here.
You know, John, but yes. While Ben's coming up, just follow up with Suzanne. I mean, that's a good point. I think that, you know, Suzanne's bringing up something. I think that the board has over the past several years recognized the need for increasing those kinds of revenues while by looking at expenses. And we've done it, you know, on the backs of a lot of our system ratepayers, let's face it. but it's getting better and better. But we've known we've had to do that, and I think that the decisions that the board has made the past few years is starting to really pay off. That becomes so much important. We start looking at bond projects down the road, the capacity. And I think Suzanne, she makes a good point. I think it's something to be recognized.
Ben Conley, as you all may remember, is partnered with Grant Thornton. This was the third year of Grant Thornton's audit contract with us, and I think we have a pretty good audit. We'll let him report on that.
Thanks, John. Good morning to everyone. We, I thought from an overall perspective, and certainly try not to duplicate anything that John said, I thought it would be important to communicate the results of the audit. For the most recently completed audit this morning, I'll do the best I can, having listened to his communication, to try not to duplicate any of that. By the same token, I'd encourage you that if you have questions, feel free to ask them as we go throughout. We will have a little bit of time at the end, certainly if you want to save it for them, but feel free to treat this very informally from my perspective, and be sure and jump in if you have questions. In terms of the agenda, actually, you know, the things that we thought were important to cover, obviously the discussion of the reports that are to be issued upon approval. Talk about the results of the audit. Talk about some of the financial highlights. Again, John's covered a number of those, but certainly from a high-level perspective to give you the key changes between current year and prior year, especially with respect to the balance sheet, in which John did not cover that. The next one would be to discuss the results of the OMB, stands for Office Management and Budget, Circular A133, or the single audit, the report results associated with the authorities' federal and state grant programs. Management advisory comments is certainly one for the current year we wanted to cover. Two, kind of updated status of prior year on the status of two comments that hadn't been fully implemented before this year that we'd recommended year before last, and wanted to just cover the status of those. And there's various required auditor communications. Statement and Auditing Standard 61 requires us to make various communications to audit committees, those committees that are involved in engaging us. So I'll certainly run through those required communications. And again, feel free to ask questions as we go throughout, but there will be time at the end if you'd like to say them. In terms of the reports to be issued, you really have two primary reports. John referred to the CAFR, and that's really the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report of the Authority. The second report is really the one I mentioned that deals with the federal and state grant programs of the Authority, the OMB Circular 133 or Single Audit Report. Now, the last one there is really communicated through this document, which is really the Memorandum of Advisory Comments. If we have either what we characterize as material weaknesses or significant deficiencies, we're required to formalize a report. In the current year, just because we only had one current year observation, which I'm going to articulate, and really two, what I consider, you know, important but not earth-shaking comments that we'd recommended previously, we thought it would be appropriate just to talk through that with this committee this morning. In terms of the actual results of the audit, I'm happy to report that we're rendering unqualified or clean opinions or opinion on the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report as well as clean reports. And there's really two reports on the A133 or grant work that we did, and we're happy to report to this committee that we are rendering unqualified or clean opinion and reports in connection with most recently completed audit. Also happy to report, I think from a committee's perspective, certainly indicative of clean operation from an overall audit perspective, is that we reported no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses, noted none during the conduct of our audit. Also, I think equally important to this committee is that we had no scope limitations placed on us this year by management. That really means that my team could perform whatever audit procedures that we felt necessary in our professional opinion to render an opinion on the financial statement to conduct a single audit in accordance with the requirements without any obstruction, hurdles, nothing placed in front of us. Very good cooperation really was provided by authority staff. There are no unresolved audit issues. Ultimately, this report gets approved and distributed as it's approved by the board. At this point, no unresolved audit issues. Just to understand that the governance aspect needs to take place before the reports are ultimately distributed. And then, you know, continued open and effective communication, which from my perspective is the key. The ability to really interact, ask whatever questions, look at whatever information we need to. And I think Matt probably feels the brunt of the audit. Certainly John and Jim and others have an interaction in that process. By the same token, Matt does a very good job of recording what we call accrual entries to conform really what cash basis ultimately to full accrual, and also to prepare a comprehensive annual financial report, as you've seen, with very few comments actually being provided and implemented by us. Next page is really the financial highlights of the assets. I guess I always like to see a little color. Sometimes things get a little boring for me in life, so I think I have to add a little color here, but I don't know that it adds much other than for the key things. If you look at change year over year, you see primarily an increase in restricted assets, which, and if you look at the next page, maybe a little bit difficult to do that, at least on the PowerPoint here. If you look at the long-term liability increase, third line item from the top, you see an increase in that attributable to the issuance of debt. You go back to the asset side, you see that because of the issuance of debt, you had some unspent bond proceeds that were reflected as restricted assets to be used for capital purposes, the most significant change. And then John had mentioned the disposal of the Sugar Land facility during the current year, which would explain, primarily explain the decrease in net capital assets in 2006 versus 2005. For the most part, I thought that was the key balance sheet. And again, this is at the 10,000 foot level, but if you look at in the overall balance sheet, those are the key things that we saw with respect to the current year audit. Pages 7 and 8 are really the revenue and expenses of the authority through the current year. And I think even though there's some minor changes kind of between categories, if you look overall, total revenue, as John had indicated on his slide, just down moderately from 05 for 06 as compared to 05. The other thing on the expense side, expenses were also down mildly in 06 versus 05. And again, you see some minor shifts in categories of expenses, but for the most part, if you're looking at it in terms of totals, very consistent performance between years financially. On page 9, the single audit results, again, the grant compliance audit, we're happy to report. Now, we don't test every program. There's a risk-based approach that's required by the circular, and we certainly comply and follow that. But in terms of programs tested, there were no instances of noncompliance noted during the current year. And again, as I've mentioned previously, no material weaknesses or reportable conditions in internal control over financial reporting of the audit of compliance regarding the major programs, which are the ones that we tested. So that's, again, very favorable results. In terms of the management advisory comments, you know, really the only current year comment, and I'm dealing with this, you know, frankly, with a lot of my clients, and I guess as an audit partner, when you don't sleep good at night, it's usually thinking about fraud, or it's certainly reading the press and seeing where certain situations have arisen during the current year. And you always want to make sure that the clients that you're responsible for have the appropriate controls in place. And without going through a lot of that, from a very high level perspective, if you look at fraud, and again, the ultimate purpose of our report is to ensure that the financial statements are not materially misstated. You know, it's not a fraud audit. It's not a forensic investigation. By the same token, we look at the key controls in each of the key process areas, and we try to make sure that we obtain an understanding of those controls. It's not like in the Sarbanes-Oxley or public company arena where we actually render an opinion on the controls. By the same token, we're required to gain an understanding of those controls. From an overall perspective, as I've indicated, we think controls are strong. The key fraud risks are really associated, especially in the governmental sector, with misappropriation of assets. There's not a large intent, or there's no benefit really personally for people in this sector typically to misstate financial statements. If you're in the public company arena and you can generate additional, you know, operating income, or if you look at earnings per share and those kinds of things, there's things that certainly impact people's ability financially to do better than maybe the numbers may indicate if you don't change the numbers. But in this sector, the primary fraud risk is misappropriation of assets. If you look in the misappropriation of assets area, about 90% of that deals with cash. Probably not a big surprise to most folks. And then cash, there's really three pieces of that. There's skimming, which is cash not ultimately getting deposited into the coffers of the organization. It gets thefted before that, or it may get deposited. The second one, it gets deposited, but then you have some sort of a large near theft that occurs. And the third one, which is really in percentage terms, about 75% of that 90% I mentioned really deals with unauthorized payments, okay? Unauthorized payments to vendors, unauthorized payments to employees. Maybe they said they worked overtime, they didn't, those kinds of things. And so I don't know if anybody followed the fraud out in West Texas relating to Snyder Drilling Company, but there's a fraud that had gone on for a number of years there, really where the person was responsible for the fraud, even when they had large disbursements that were requiring a dual signature, he became the dual signer as well. Little did the COO know that he was ultimately signing. And that fraud, as I read the press, was about $80 million over 5 years. And so the key thing from an audit perspective is to figure out what controls need to be in place to make sure that you have appropriate controls over the disbursements. And certainly from an overall perspective, we did. We thought there should be a second authorization and approval. Basically, you know, somebody that's familiar with the vendors that are being paid and making sure you actually look at the disbursements. And we'd recommended that John, kind of as a CFO, look at those, which, as we brought it up during the audit, John implemented that control that day, actually, started looking through the disbursements and the check run. So nothing we saw that would lead us to any indication of anything, but to consider continuous improvement ideas and to make sure that the organization is keeping appropriate controls over the disbursements. In terms of the prior year comments, really, we had a number of them several years ago, and very happy to see that most of those have been implemented. The first one there that's in progress really deals, and it's a little bit more difficult to do it in this environment, certainly it is in others, but I thought it's a reasonable expectation, because I think as the board and the audit committee, we like to know how are we doing versus our peers. You know, I mean, you show us a lot of numbers and you show us some trends, but how does that stack up, you know, with other organizations? And again, it's more difficult in this sector to do that, but I know John's been working with his team to try to identify what the key performance measures would be, and that to compare those to peers is also to compare those performance measures over time. You know, maybe the last 3 years you look at how you've done against yourself, and then also look at peers as you can do it. So again, that's not an easy task. By the same token, I think it would be a meaningful exercise to go through to certainly assist the board and the audit committee with respect to measuring the financial performance of the organization. And the second one here, the status of prior comments, the one that's changing the payroll to paying actual and arrears, will be implemented in connection with the new system conversion. So that's why you have the 08 target on that. Again, nothing overly significant there, but certainly management's aware of that, and we'll do that at the appropriate time in connection with the conversion. Page 11 really starts what I'd referred to as Statement and Auditing Standard 61, the required communications we're required to make. Really, this audit is required to be conducted not only in accordance with GAS, which is generally accepted auditing standards, but also because this organization receives federal and state awards, it's required to be conducted in accordance with generally accepted government auditing standards. And we performed and complied with those standards in the conduct of our audit. In terms of other things that are important to note, and I'm not going to run through all of these, as you can look over this page and the next page, there aren't any problems in any of these areas. So instead of going through each one of these, but I wanted to give you an idea that, you know, there's things that we're required to communicate. I'd be happy to answer questions on those. But the good news was there were no significant past adjustments, no significant audit adjustments, no disagreements with management, et cetera. So very good, you know, in terms of the responses to those. In terms of the instances of fraud, again, none noted. Certainly we look for the material frauds, anything that would be significant to the organization. Nothing came to our attention. Certainly we interact with Don as your internal auditor throughout the course of the external audit. Also are familiar with the audits that he does throughout the course of the year, just to make sure that we're in sync and that we have an integrated approach to auditing the authority. It's always unique a little bit for me to have to comment on going concern for a governmental entity that's been around for a long time. By the same token, we used to do that through the opinion only if we had a concern about an organization and its ability to really continue to the end of its next fiscal year. We'd report that as a going concern consideration in the opinion. Now it's also required communication under Statement and Auditing Standard 61, so I'm sure everybody's relieved to know that, at least from Grant Thorne's perspective, we'll think you'll be around at least till 8/31 of this next year. The other thing that's a requirement for public company clients is really to a lot of governance-related aspects around engaging your external auditor before management consulting services. And so even though it's not required in the sector, I always like to be transparent and accountable to the group that we were not engaged to perform any consulting services for the organization this year. The only service we provided was the external audit. and therefore we were not compensated in any manner for performing any services in addition to the external audit. And then really on page 14 is, in terms of what I believe to be the most significant consideration for next year, for clients other than, frankly, those that have been subject to Sarbanes-Oxley and the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. There's been a lot of discussion really since Sarbanes-Oxley came out as to at some point, how far is this going to end up interfacing with other organizations, private companies, not-for-profit organizations, governments, et cetera. This auditing standard, which will be effective for the authority for this next fiscal year, really changes the definitions that we've typically used in this sector for material weakness and significant deficiencies. It conforms those definitions to the same definitions as the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board auditing standard number 2, which is required for public companies. Now, don't confuse that with the fact that we have to do the 404 work. We don't have to opine on controls. But in terms of, as we identify, you know, potential management advisory comments, there's no difference effective next year in terms of the material weakness or significant deficiency definition than there is for a public company audit. And I don't, if I was going to use a whole page here, I could put the whole definition on here. So you see some bullet points here. There are kind of some periods in front of the definition. But it gets a little bit circular, but we've already heard comments on GASB this morning. Well, I think those could probably be carried forward to the AICPA and others that certainly do the best they can, ultimately, to try to define things and provide guidance to the profession to cover. But the definition starts off with a number of words, and it says, more than a remote likelihood, and then there's some other words, that a misstatement of the financial statements that is more than inconsequential, okay? And then it goes on. And so that gets you a little bit of trying to give us guidance in the profession on how to do that. The bottom line is that there's a focus now on the potential impact and not the actual impact. And what I mean by that is there's a presumption now, and I say now, effective for this next fiscal year audit for the authority, that if we, let's just say we identify an audit adjustment, okay, the presumption is going to be because we had an audit adjustment, the authority has a significant deficiency in its internal control environment, okay? That's a presumption, it's rebuttable, but you start with the presumption if you have one audit adjustment that you have a significant deficiency. If there's a belief that that audit adjustment could have been material, you have a presumption for a material weakness, okay? Again, it's rebuttable. By the same token, that's pretty much how the pendulum is swung, if you will, in terms of profession. Certainly not different than what we've seen in the public company arena. So I think from a practical perspective, the last bullet point I have here is that the expectation would be is that there would be increases in the number of material weaknesses reported and the number of significant deficiencies reported in the future years because of the tightening of this definition. And I'm saying that's globally. And certainly, we're aware of the standard. We obviously have to comply with the professional standards and the regulations. And as the regulatory environment changes, we have to change and be sensitive to that. By the same token, with this particular organization, I'm not overly alarmed on, if you look at those three comments and look at that, assuming things stay stable and the organization continues to pay appropriate diligence to its control environment, I don't anticipate this to be a significant change. But there are changes that because of this, and there are reporting things that I really believe for a number of clients where things will actually get better in terms of improvement of controls, but the reporting could actually look more harmful. And so I think it's important to, you know, educate boards and audit committees to understand that the rules of the game are changing, that the bar is being raised, and by the same token, we'll continue to monitor those changes, make you aware of those. So with that, that's all of my prepared comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have this morning.
Great. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
One last observation I'll make, if you'll turn to, just back real quickly, page 7 in your handout, Director Baker's question about the trends on revenues, you can see fairly clearly, and Ben went through that just a minute ago, but you can see things like raw water sales, treated water, wastewater, lake operations, those revenue areas are all going up and will continue to do so over time. The only area that's actually going down is the cost reimbursable area, and that's because, again, the the transfer of the Sugar Land operations from a cost reimbursable to actually it's a wastewater treatment operation. So those revenues are going up. And I make one last observation on the management comment about the enhancing controls concerning cash disbursements. We had prior, really to the audit, we have two levels of oversight of disbursements and stuff beyond the printing of the checks and our wire transfers. And we've since added a third additional area where I look at every single check before it goes out, and I look at all the wire transfers before they go out and check the sequences of the checks, make sure all checks are accounted for and things like that. So we've just added that as just another level of control in that area.
You need to do something to John.
Well, we submit our comprehensive annual financial report to both the TSEC and also the Texas Water Development Board, so we need a resolution for that, and I'll read it here. Be it hereby resolved that the Administration and Audit Committee recommends to the Board of Directors of the Brazos River Authority adoption of the following resolution. Be it resolved that the Board of Directors hereby accepts the Brazos River Authority's comprehensive annual financial report for fiscal year 2006 and approves its filing with the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. The Chief Financial Officer is hereby designated to file the report and the annual filing with the affidavit with the Executive Director of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality.
That's the resolution. Okay, thank you there. You've heard the resolution read. We need a motion.
I move for the adoption.
Okay. Motion by Steve Pena and second by Bayon. Please poll the committee.
Director Hughes?
Yes.
Director Bayon?
Yes.
Director Baker?
Yes.
Director Carava?
Yes.
Director Christian?
Yes.
Director Pena?
Yes.
Director Zaccanino?
Yes.
Okay, motion's passed.